Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our tech podcast by Bosch Rexroth. My name is Robert Weber, and my guest today is Thomas Fechner. Thomas, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, Robert. It's always a pleasure being with you.
Thanks a lot. We want to talk a little bit about platform-based engineering, and you showcased the DeepSeek example a few weeks ago, and you said that this is a Sputnik moment for us. What is the Sputnik moment now in automation?
Of course, it comes from the software domain. And I like the example because DeepSeek showcases how strong you can be utilizing platform-based engineering compared to the traditional way of working.
What does it mean, platform-based engineering, now for the automation business?
The automation basically is still working very traditional. And if we look how the productivity in software engineering is increasing, then we are very jealous and like to transfer these success factors towards the automation domain. And platform-based engineering is the method what is really progressing a lot in the software engineering. There's a Gartner figure where you can see that we are in the middle of the trend of going from 40% platform-based offerings towards 80% platform-based offerings in 2 years of now. So this is the method which is making the difference in software engineering.
But what is it? Can you describe the method?
Okay.
What does it mean to do that?
Yeah, the base of platform-based engineering is that you have a standardized platform on which you develop your features. So in this platform must solve
the... So it's your Control-X automation.
In the automation domain, it's the Control-X OS what we are delivering. It's an operating system what is basically managing the data exchange, what is managing the decoupling of hardware. So hardware-software gets completely decoupled. And what is managing, of course, all the distribution questions. So how can I commission the system? How can I update the system? How can I access the system? So these things are solved in the middleware. How is communication working? So, and based on this...
Is this a new layer?
This is a middleware layer. And it is similar to what we experienced on the IT side when we make the switch from the mainframe towards the personal computer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of a sudden, the operating systems appeared, what we all know very well with all these revisions. And the same happened, of course, for the mobile phones. The first mobile phones, maybe you remember, were really embedded systems. So software, hardware, extreme deep, and the companies were even making...
Very successful.
At the beginning.
At the beginning, yes.
But then we had a really explosion of innovation and shift while we got the iOS and the Android operating systems, where a community could contribute all of a sudden with a lot of new functionality and ideas.
But this is interesting because you mentioned iOS and Android, and these are two different worlds. We have an open source Android system and we have a closed system. So what is your favorite? Is it a proprietary system like iOS or is it a Android more open source?
The interesting thing is also on iOS, you are doing a platform-based engineering. It's just the way how you commercialize it. It's a bit different. But with the iOS, you also have built a platform where you have a community which is contributing. The community is managed different in both ways. The monetization is working different.
But let's talk about the automation community. They are not focused when it comes to open source, right? So open source is a totally new playing field for them. They need to learn what does it mean. There's no free lunch when it comes to open source, et cetera, et cetera. So what do we need to learn in the automation business when it comes to platform-based engineering?
Yeah, of course, utilizing open source, this is what everybody's keen on because you have not to redevelop it. So you utilize value which is already created again and again and again. By this, you are scaling and you get productive. Of course, you have then the responsibility towards the customer to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, that's your business model then.
Exactly. So utilizing open source code means on the other side, the responsibility to maintain and to keep it updated. And this is what is very often forgotten. It's always thought as it's for free. And of course, by this, I'm also not willing to pay for it. No, that's for sure not the right way.
Yeah, but there's a business model behind open source projects, right? A lot of open source projects has also a business model. There's a company like Red Hat, and they are using open source project to make money out of it. Yeah? So there's a business sweet spot.
Yeah, of course. But you always add then things to the open source functionality.
Exactly. Yeah. Is this the way for the automation business? Totally focusing on software first developments?
So software first thinking is for sure one of the paradigm shifts the machine builders have to learn. And very often it's a question, what does this mean, software first? Does this mean I need an engineering chain up front? Do I need to virtualize everything? No, that's not what I see and understand when I'm talking about digital first. But it's the obligation that you have to think about your automation architecture. Because at the end, you like to get fast and productive in building your machine. You need to think about the efforts for integration. And this architecture you have to define upfront before you start. And this has to do with the selection of the right automation.
So it's a software-defined machine.
A software-defined machine at the end. And this leads you, in my absolute confession, is the right word, I think, yeah, to an operating system which you can deploy on different building blocks of your machine. It can be different hardware vendors even, where you work with the same operating system, which enables you later to integrate everything very effective.
Your colleagues from the Bosch Automotive, they established the slogan software-defined vehicle, right? So you are going the next step, software-defined machines.
Yeah, for sure. I think we are already very far in this, that everybody's clear that software makes a difference in machine building already. The question is if we are doing it very professional. And in the end, the toolbox we are utilizing is a very aged one.
From a machine builder perspective, what does it mean now for him? Is he now capable to sell also digital products as an add-on to his machine, to his hardware?
Yeah, if a machine builder is making the step towards platform-based engineering, then he gets the capability to add functionality later during the runtime of the machine, which is coming by new software functionality. A very good example is what we get now from the artificial intelligence side. A lot of analytic features are coming on top, and how to deploy them on an existing machine, which is very close in a proprietary solution.
But my feeling is that they are not able, or it is very difficult for the sales guys to sell digital products to the customers. And they're doing something, maybe we should stop this whole software stuff. We're still focusing on our machine.
Yeah, but you need to see also the customers or the end customers who are operating the machines they are learning. With each and every crisis we have, they see that adaption, flexibility, fast reaction on changing environments is the key. And this always leads you towards the requirement of the machine to get more flexible and more adaptive.
If you compare it to the, for example, automotive industry, the customer also wants software edits. They want new software edits. And that's a problem for the maybe European, German car manufacturers, because they can't offer so many updates when it comes to software and to new functionalities in the car. Maybe it's a good sign that we now get a lot of pressure for the machine building companies to offer things like that.
Absolutely. And we see that there's really a shift in understanding. Besides software first, what you already mentioned, there's a second paradigm shift, which is very important. This is true openness.
What does it mean, true openness? So co-opetition or what?
Yeah,
or?
At the end, it's even co-opetition or realizing win-win-win situations. And
oh, that's too nice. Win-win-win-win. Everybody win. Everybody wins.
Everybody wins means at the end, you are not winning all. So you're ready to share. You have to share. So that's maybe the better explanation. And this is something what we are not so used in the classical industrial space. So this is always being proprietary.
I want to win everything.
Have everything under control. It's my IP. We even secure ourselves a lot with IPs. And this is what you have to overcome and work really towards ecosystems.
IP is for the weak companies?
No, it's not for the weak.
It's the Elon Musk philosophy.
Yeah. I think we have to differentiate. On the hardware side, IP still has a really strong meaning also for us. On the software side, a different understanding. That's all about speed.
Yeah. And true openness. So we need to learn to work together with the GitHub guys. Nobody knows these guys who are working there in these projects. It's very difficult for traditional machine building companies or for a traditional company like Bosch to trust these guys in this project.
Yeah, that's true. So in the end, we have really the opportunity for huge communities to contribute. But this you can somehow control with whom you are working, of course. And let's first start in your own company, yeah, to get all your engineers on board to contribute on a platform to make code which is reusable. Second step is go into a community where the people know the domain and you already can broaden a lot. Invite startups or young companies who have a strong innovative offering, what usually has the problem to get integrated in established and proven automation environments. So all these things you can start. And if you gain trust in this open ecosystem work and in the work in communities, then of course you can open really towards the whole world, to GitHub world.
Yeah, I think a good example is Bosch Rexroth is very strong when it comes to ROS. You invested a lot of time and code and people went to the conferences. I always meet Bosch Rexroth guys there. So ROS is a very big topic for you, right? And that's, I think it's a good example how to be a part of this community, not like I'm the big Bosch, I want to show you what we can do. So maybe to collaborate with smaller companies, to give hardware, to share hardware. And I think it's very interesting what you're doing in this ROS communities.
I think we can transfer the learning from there. Why we are engaging in ROS is because robotics, and ROS is the operating system for robotics. Robotics is an integration art, I would even say. And the differentiating functionality comes always from universities or from young companies. And the traditional ones, they are looking for industrialization and make it very reliable in also all the supply chain questions and so on. So the need was very fast there to have an integration platform. And where do they head to? Towards an operating system. Somehow we did not make the transfer to a classical machine building. And this is what we offer with our automation platform. So the industry knows already that a success factor is a standardized middleware which is integrating.
You mentioned GitHub. When I go to GitHub, I don't see any IEC 6.11.31 code there. So do we need to learn to speak new programming languages in the industrial sector, in the automation business?
Yeah, of course. And especially if you look what the students have as knowledge when they come from the universities, yeah, usually they didn't learn the ladder logic and how we did it traditionally. So this is also one of the tasks of the operating system you offer, that you can enable the users later to use any language in coding their
but
functional
you also
software.
Support the old.
We
stuff.
Also support, of course, the old one. But all the apps you let run on the operating system can be coded in different languages. It can be a Python, a C++, even in combination. It's no issue.
Okay. I want to come back to the middleware one step back. The middleware, is this middleware also capable to provide updates, to provide DevOps, to provide updates when it comes to cybersecurity, et cetera, et cetera? So it's also a communication layer, or can you go a little bit more in details?
Yeah, of course. In our point of view, the middle layer has the tasks first to decouple hardware and software. The second topic is to organize the data management between devices as well as between the different functional software blocks which come on top. Also to manage the software blocks in the runtime. Yeah, when do I execute which one and how do they communicate between each other? And then, and this is the important thing, manage all the updates, all the administration of the content. And this is what you need in a managed way in your machine, in all the intelligent devices at the end, if you like to get cyber resilience capable.
And if we think a little bit further, when we talk about virtual PLCs, you also need these communication layers then.
Yeah, of course. If you have the operating system, which is solving the topics I just mentioned, of course, you can also deploy it on an IPC and even higher in the cloud. Yeah. So you can make a vertical distribution of your code, what is nowadays just possible if you make at the beginning a distribution. What do I solve where? What to deploy where? In the open system, we are thinking you can deploy at the end. You can first develop your automation code, and then you can think about where does it need to run to have the right real-time capabilities. Where you need a fast response of your hardware, of course you go on an embedded device in the machine. If it's something which is just needed to be close, you have a 200 millisecond latency requirements, you go on an HPC. If it is something analytics, You just update a few times in an hour, you can go to the cloud.
Yeah, exactly. At the end, I always ask my guests, the times are not easy for the automation business. What are your hope for the whole community, for the whole automation community?
Yeah, first of all, I'm absolutely convinced automation has a great future.
For sure.
Because automation is a mega trend. We see even that it's accelerating, looking on the functionality, which is coming from the IT side, and we need to bring it in our systems.
And so, you see new competitors, right?
Of course, also new competitors. And usually this keeps us running and innovating faster. So we are really, we like the challenge. Yeah, we are not running away from it. So that's the mega trend topic. Another thing is, and this goes a bit deeper, if you look what happened with the digitalization of our work desks the last 10 years, you can be a bit desperate because there's no more a lot of devices there. So not much business you can do as a device supplier. It's ending
as software. So printer business is gone.
Exactly. This is gone. This will not happen in machine building because at the end, we are always treating physical goods. We are adding value to physical goods and this will stay. So it will be at the end a very intelligent combination of hardware and software, what makes the production of the future. And this is what we like to contribute to.
And you have one more?
Yeah. And the third one is that we really see that a movement starts to move away from the traditional way to automate. For example, we offer hackathons for customers which are a bit struggling. Say, oh, let's try it out. We say, okay, let's come.
Let's invite the crazy guys.
Exactly. And bring them together with the software architects. And always they go out with a smile in their face. And one thing they always state is, we have never expected that we can accelerate so much with this approach.
Thomas, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.